These are two of the most desirable apartments in all of South Korea. True to its name, Castle Gold is a gold-plated 36-story complex with a fitness center, library, and golf practice room. It features a scenic view of the Han River and has even appeared in several movies. It's only a short walk away from a theme park, baseball stadium, and the sixth tallest building in the world. So, what does a 2,000-square-foot, 3-bedroom, 3-bath penthouse in one of Seoul's richest neighborhoods cost? Well, to buy one would set you back just under $1.8 million. But, lucky for you, there's another option. If you're willing to rent, the price drops all the way down to zero. No monthly rent, no taxes, no fees. You could move in today and live here for 2 years without spending a dime. This is no PR stunt, promotion, or government subsidy. It's simply a private agreement between tenant and landlord. Nor is it unique to this building. About 40% of all renters in Korea are currently paying exactly $0 a month, and nearly all of the rest pay far less than the market rate, often just a couple hundred dollars or less. How? Sponsored by Nebula, the exclusive home to my original series, China Actually. When the fighting stopped in 1953, it was unclear whether either side would ever fully recover from the Korean War. Already poor before the loss of 3 million people, half of which were civilians, the peninsula was in dire straits. Those who survived did so only thanks to foreign aid, which was considered by Americans to be, quote, a hopeless and bottomless pit. Very little changed over the next decade. Then, the military seized control of South Korea. And this new government had one and only one thing in mind: economic growth. Its plan was to follow in Japan's footsteps, to go from hopeless war-torn pit to modern industrial powerhouse in a single generation. Miraculously, it worked. A few years later, its economy was growing by double digits. And by the time it hosted the Olympics in 1988, it had finally caught up, attaining the same per capita GDP as Japan when it hosted the Games 20 years earlier. But this incredibly fast growth came at a cost. For one, it cost Koreans 30 years of their freedom. After taking control in 1961, the unelected government suspended civil liberties, banned alternative parties, and arrested student protesters. It also cost Koreans financially. During the war, 68% of factories, 46% of railroads, 80% of power plants, and 20% of homes were destroyed. But the latter would have to wait. From the government's perspective, factories, railroads, and power plants were far more important. Better, it thought, to grow the nation as a whole, whose riches would eventually trickle down to all. To accomplish this, it redirected capital away from individuals and toward corporations. Loans were so cheaply handed out to Korean companies and their success so heavily prioritized that they grew inconceivably huge. Today, these conglomerates sell anything and everything imaginable. Imagine if Apple and Microsoft were in the business not only of phones and laptops, but also t-shirts, food, dishwashers, cars, theme parks, and ships. That's the range of products sold by Samsung, Hyundai, LG, and Lotte. Remember that apartment building from earlier? That was built by Lotte, which also, naturally, sells chewing gum. It owns the shopping mall beneath the building, the nearby theme park, and the sixth tallest building. The closest baseball team is called the LG Twins. But with so much capital diverted to these conglomerates, very little was left over for individuals. As a result, between 1970 and 85, just 1 in 10 Korean homebuyers received a mortgage. Without them, families struggled to buy or build new homes, intensifying the shortage created by the war. And rather than simply increase the supply of homes, which would distract from its export-oriented development, the government imposed regulations like rent control. So, homeowners got creative. What if, they thought, instead of paying them money, tenants loaned them money? This would kill two birds with one stone. One, it wouldn't technically qualify as renting, allowing them to evade the government's rules. And two, it would solve the shortage of capital. If they needed cash to start a business, to send their kids to school, or to renovate their home, they could bypass the banks entirely, loaning to and from one another. This practice, which may have originated way back in the 1800s, is called jonsei, and it works like this. On move-in day, you, the tenant, give your landlord hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars. Somewhere between 30 and 90%, but usually closer to 60% of that property's value. Then, during the lease, which typically lasts 2 years, you don't pay a single dime in rent. Finally, when you move out, the landlord returns your deposit in full. No more and no less. That apartment from earlier, for instance, would cost $1.8 million to buy. But you could lease it for 2 years by giving the landlord just 56% as much, about $1 million. And you'd get it all back when you moved out. This practice is so common that if these deposits were treated as loans, South Korea would have the largest household debt of any country on earth, nearly 3 times as much as property-obsessed China. Now, you probably have some questions. Let's start with, why would landlords give away rent for free? Well, there's a flip side to high interest rates. While they made buying homes unaffordable, they also made saving money very profitable. In 1967, the US interest rate was less than 4%. In Korea, it was 28%. Landlords could simply deposit their tenants' money in the bank and watch it grow. But as interest rates fell over the past 50 years, this became less and less lucrative. Meanwhile, industrialization brought millions of Koreans to cities. Or rather, city, singular. South Korea is a small country, a little smaller than the state of Kentucky. Yet today, it's twice as populous as Florida, with 51 million people. There's not much space to begin with, and this scarcity is made much worse by the dominance of just one city, Seoul. Seoul is Korea's LA, New York, DC, and Chicago combined. It's the undisputed corporate, political, and cultural capital, home to half the entire country. In other words, it seemed as though the city's housing market could only ever go in one direction, up. So, homeowners had a new idea. Instead of saving their tenants' deposit in the bank, they began using it to buy more property. Say you own an apartment worth $400,000. You could rent it out for a $300,000 deposit. Then you could take that money, plus $200,000 of your own, and buy a second $500,000 apartment. And why stop there? You could keep doing this over and over and over again. The beauty of this arrangement, one you might struggle to distinguish from a pyramid scheme, is that when one tenant moves out, a new one moves in, providing the funds to repay the first. The problem, of course, is that housing prices don't increase forever. And watch what happens to this house of cards when they fall. Let's say that $400,000 apartment loses 10% of its value. After 2 years, it's now worth just $360,000. Even if a new tenant immediately replaces the old one, this one only pays a $270,000 deposit, $30,000 short of what you owe the old one. Now imagine you lost that first $300,000 deposit. You started a business and it failed, or you bought a second property that never paid off, or you can't find a new tenant to replace the old one. Sure, you could sell that first property to pay back the tenant. But if its price falls by 30%, it would only be worth $280,000, $20,000 short of what you need. That would be catastrophic, both for you and the tenant. And that's just one property. Imagine the hole of debt you could dig for yourself if you bought 2 or 3, never mind 2 or 300, as many have. As prices soared during the pandemic, a mere 30 Koreans bought more than 8,000 homes. The top three buyers alone accumulated more than 2,200. Then, after 20 years of almost non-stop growth, the market slightly corrected. Not dramatically, but enough to cause chaos in this incredibly fragile system. Around the same time, the owner of 1,000 units across Seoul died, leaving his tenants in limbo. In theory, tenants can recover their deposits after the owner's property is liquidated. But when 1,000 people are waiting in line, there's no guarantee everyone will be made whole. So why do renters trust these strangers with their life savings? And if you already have 90% of the value of a property, why not just buy it? The first reason is that you may not have 90%. These days, banks offer low-interest, short-term, government-subsidized loans for this very purpose. A young couple without much cash can get a cheap loan, turn around, and give it to their landlord, who, after 2 years, returns it to the couple, who then return it to the bank. Even without a loan, trusting a stranger is a whole lot better than paying monthly rent. Say you're 28 years old. If you're American, you might dream of buying a single-family home with a white picket fence and a two-car garage. If you're Korean, you might be thinking of a two-bedroom apartment in a Samsung-branded high-rise. In either case, you likely don't yet have the funds at 28, even if you're married with two incomes. But there's a critical difference. In America, like most countries, your only alternative is to rent. To throw away 20, 30, or 40% of your paycheck each month while saving up for a down payment. In Korea, on the other hand, you can live rent-free for 2 years at a time if you can somehow pool together a deposit between you, your spouse, and your two families. You can start by renting a tiny villa for the lowest price you can find on the outskirts of Seoul. Then, after 2 years, you can combine the deposit you receive back, plus 2 years of wages, to lease a slightly better home. And you can keep doing this until you can afford that two-bedroom in downtown Seoul. Whereas in the United States, you'd be throwing away money on rent until the day you can finally buy. Now, this is far from a perfect solution. Korea has no answer for low-income couples who can't afford a down payment or a deposit. Never mind singles. Meanwhile, an increasing number of Koreans, about 50%, pay both a smaller deposit and some monthly rent. And this trend may continue as the country grows older and seniors prefer predictable monthly income to speculative investments. Finally, of course, there's always the risk of losing all your money in the process. Over the past few years, horror stories of fraud, dying landlords, and lost deposits have attracted widespread attention. Some are calling for a government crackdown. But there's also the risk that if this practice is overregulated, it could go extinct. If landlords weren't allowed to invest these deposits, for example, they would simply demand monthly rent instead. In that case, homeownership could be delayed or made impossible for millions of young Koreans. In other words, it's precisely this risk, however small, that makes this system function. The 0.001% probability of losing everything is the price Koreans must pay for what is effectively free rent. One risk that's unnecessary is our collective reliance on YouTube. Here, in this hyper-saturated marketplace where each video competes with millions of others, creators are incentivized to chase short-term metrics like views, clicks, and engagement. Think of YouTube like a daily newspaper stand. Each day, every video has to compete for your attention. We're incentivized to write sensationalized headlines, to focus on quantity over quality, and to churn out predictable stories that our viewers already want to hear. We want to spend more time and money on quality stories, exposés, features, and in-depth investigations. You, the audience, want those things too. Yet, the business model in which we operate prevents us from making them. There's no room to experiment or invest months of our time and thousands of dollars on big, ambitious projects. After all, what if no one bought that day's newspaper or clicked on that video? What we need is an entirely new business model, one that allows channels like this one to actually make videos that people like you want to watch. And that's why we built Nebula. Because of our direct relationship with you, the audience, we can make these big upfront investments. When Wendover Productions has an idea for a reality travel game show, we can turn it into The Getaway. When Tom Nicholas wants to create a feature-length documentary about baby boomers, we can write a check allowing him to make Boomers. And when DC Pearson has an idea for a sketch comedy show about sketch comedy shows, we can provide the resources to make it happen. All of these are real originals coming later this year, along with others from Patrick Willems, Abigail Thorne of Philosophy Tube, Real Life Lore, Bobby Broccoli, and more. And because we're incentivized to keep you happy and subscribed, we can focus entirely on creating the best possible experience. Nebula is ad-free and always evolving. We just released our biggest update ever, with a new UI and a dedicated Nebula news page, hand-curated by the team behind TLDR News. Normally, Nebula costs $5 a month, but you can get it for just half that by signing up for a year with the link on screen or in the description now. That's just $2.50 a month, an incredible deal if you ask me.